The drive on TSN 1200. Here's what you need to know today. John Herdman has reaffirmed his commitment to Canada, says he's not going anywhere after reports indicated he was off to coach the New Zealand national team. Tom Brady has retired from the National Football League. 7 Super Bowls for the greatest of all time. And the top candidate for the NHLPA executive director job is U.S. Secretary of Labor Marty Walsh. And that is what you need to know today as we bring our first guest on the Gabriel Pizza Hotline. He is the Director of Basketball Operations at Carleton and consultant for the Ottawa Senators, Dave Smart. Dave, how you doing today?
I'm all right. You know me, I don't want to be high maintenance, but that did not sound like Boston Levi to me. Like, not that I'm high maintenance.
I thought Boston Levi was only in the extra.
In any form, it's not my thing. But that did not sound like part of our non-monetary agreement.
We'll make sure Boston Levi is played in the extra. How about that?
It's not good enough. I mean, it's one thing to do it pro bono, but it's another when I ask for simple requests.
I did not know, like, it was intro, like, and extra.
No, you know what it is?
Only Lee and AJ together once a month, which is pretty easy because you both take so many vacation days. So that's worked out well. Boston Levi at the start, Boston Levi at the end. I don't think I asked for anything else.
I think the reason AJ never noticed is because I think Matt calls Dave after Need to Know, so he doesn't hear the song.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm that needs to be fixed. Just not trying to be high maintenance in any form.
No, you're not. You might not be trying, but...
that needs to be fixed.
Okay, we'll work on that.
Lee and AJ only DVing together once a month?
I think check, he's back check, in a couple of weeks, check. So...
I know, but you're on vacation. Something will happen. I know that...
I am taking vacation in the spring, just to let you know. Because I have to, because then it's basically nothing until the end of football season again. So that's a long ways away. Just wanted to let you know, because I know it's coming. Didn't you just go to the World Cup? Like, that question has to be coming.
No, not at all. I mean, that's part of our agreement. I don't want to have to deal with the two of you more than once a month. That's all. And the Boston Levi thing seems so simple.
Well, we will get Boston Levi for you in the extra.
I mean, the fact that we said Boston Levi 12 times in the last 3.5 minutes probably makes up for not
probably. What school did he go to again?
I'm pretty sure he coaches at Carleton too.
Okay, there you go.
I heard some real, like, I mean, Mac and I, like, we have a weird relationship. I think we get along, but I don't know if we get along, but we seem to get along pretty well. But I heard some pretty high praise about him as a hockey player too. Like, in terms of his talent level. So, you know how I feel about talent. But still, I heard some very high... I heard some very high praise about his talent level.
And what about his commitment level?
I don't know. I didn't hear it one way or the other. I mean, he's old now, so no one talks about the other stuff. They were just talking good. It's 2023. We only talk about the good. I don't know if there is any bad. I'm not inferring that there is bad. I'm just saying that they only talk about the good.
Well, that's a good segue, because there's good surrounding a couple of your teams right now, the Ottawa Senators and the Carleton Ravens, both men and women, excited for Capital Hoops later this week, and we'll talk about that a little bit later. But just, you know, for any team, when you get in a bit of a rut to go out and, you know, the Sens on a 4-game winning streak and beat a rival in Toronto in there, and, you know, your Carleton men... after a couple of losses in a row, which doesn't happen very often in that program, to go out and beat a really good Queens team last weekend. What does it mean to kind of get some positive momentum when, you know, maybe things feel like they're in a bit of a rut?
It's in the middle of the regular season, so I feel like, you know, you have an opportunity to bounce back. The good thing and the bad thing about sport, I always say to the players, is that the good thing about it is when you play lousy, you usually have a game within a couple of days, or at worst, in our case, 6 days, and like at the college level. And the bad thing about it is that when you're when you're playing, when you have a big, big win, you usually have to play again 2 days later. So, I mean, a lot of the time, when you struggle with things, especially at the university level, when we have a week, like we have 4 days, and really, sometimes when you lose two in a row, it turns into more like 5 days. I mean, you're not on the floor on that fifth day, but you still, everybody's now watching film. Everybody's worried about what they didn't do and what they could have done that could have avoided losing. Everything becomes more precise when you lose, especially when you didn't expect to lose. So again, you get so much more done in that week. And then when you've got a week in between games, that gives you a lot of time. And all of a sudden you come into the game, you know, as the hunter, as opposed to the hunted, and that changes too. I mean, I said this during the week. I go, Queens are coming in here for the first time in forever, and everybody expects them to win. Let's see how they respond, because not many people respond very well when everybody expects them to win, and they responded horribly. I mean, we played well, don't get me wrong, but they were awful, I don't know. I am a pain in the neck, and I have my opinions that people don't like. But winning once, like, it means you're good, but it doesn't mean a lot. Like, sustainability, it means you know what you're doing. Like, they're a good team, no question. They're not a great team. And I have no problem saying it. I don't care what anybody thinks. They're a good team. If they were a great team, they wouldn't have beaten us by 14 and then turned around and got hammered by it. Like, they won by 14, but it was a 20-point game. Like, they're a good team. Like, and they're dangerous. But sustainability is hard. Like, and I'm sure they're going through this. It's like, whoa. We always thought it was easy. If you were at the top, it would be easy to stay at the top. It's not easy to stay at the top, you know. And they bounced back well on Sunday. But again, like, Queens are a really well coached team. They do a lot of really solid things, but they haven't been the number one team. So a lot of the time for the players, you know, they didn't play with the same energy. They played as if they were trying not to lose on Friday. Whereas when they beat us, they came in going, you know, we're just as good as these guys, and they're the favorites. We got nothing to lose, and they played trying to win. And it's probably a 25-point difference. And we were just the opposite. We kind of knew that we'd been struggling before we played them the first time, but we had been winning games, close games, but we knew we were vulnerable, and we kind of played not to lose, and we were terrible. And then we come into this game, and it's like, they already beat us. We got nothing to lose, so we came in and we attacked the situation, and we hammered them. And the combination caused the score difference. Like, that's two teams that basically are pretty close to the same. And again, first game, our second or third best player wasn't playing. Second game, their second or third best player wasn't playing. So obviously that comes into play. But that's a 28-point difference, and let's be honest, if you watch the games, it was more like a 40-point difference. Like, I would say both games were kind of 20-point games either way. So there's some maturity that needs to go on in both teams. But, you know, Queens are a well-coached team, so when they lost to us and kind of got hammered by us, and then they show up in Ottawa, and it's like, well, we got nothing to lose. We were terrible on Friday. They're well-coached. They do good things. Ottawa, you know, Ottawa's Ottawa, and like, Ottawa's dangerous. I personally don't think they're a national championship team, because I don't think you can shoot 48 threes a game and expect to win three games in 3 days. I think it seems like a fun way to play, but you can't win three games in 3 days doing that. But you can beat anyone on any given day. Like, they're extremely dangerous. But, like, that's a lot of threes. They shot, I don't know, I thought it was 48, but it might have been 45 threes at home. You know, when you're shooting two-thirds of your shots from the three-point line, man, you're pretty vulnerable to a really bad day. Now, you're also very dangerous, so they're that kind of team. I don't think they're going to win the national championship, because I think we're better than them, and I think there's one other team better than them. But I think they're built to win 3-3. And I think that's because they were there last year and realized they weren't built to win 3-3 last year, and they kind of changed how they play a little bit this year. So I do think they're legit, especially if they get healthy again. But again, it's still a learning process. It's totally different when you come in as the favorite than when you come in as the underdog.
How do you prepare for that scenario when you're not used to being the favorite and you don't handle it well? Is it preparation? Is it reps in that scenario? Like, how do you become good at that?
Well, it's just my opinion, and AJ brought this up early in the show. I can't believe I listen to your show, man. I gotta find better things to do. No disrespect. I love both of you, but it's middle of the day. I should be doing other things. But I was listening to you, and and you guys say things that I like your opinions. But you mentioned that, or I don't know if you mentioned, but it was mentioned that you gotta enjoy the moments. Like, it can't be championship or nothing. I agree with that, and I disagree with that. I think sometimes,
as a fan, I said that though.
As a fan, yeah, but as a like,
which is different than being in an organization. I'm just saying, as a fan, like, why, like, if you cheer for, like, we got Cam Clement here who cheers for the Lions, and like they've won one playoff game in 60 years. So if you can't enjoy certain moments as a fan, and it just gives you misery, why would you even be a sports fan? I get that. That's a completely different thing from being in an organization, because you don't want to have an organization where you're going 60 years with one playoff win. That certainly is unacceptable.
Right. But it's the same place for the team. That's sort of where I'm getting at. Like,
yeah.
some teams, you know, like, you ask, how do you avoid that? Well, you set your standards differently. Like, you know, I was saying to our assistants, like, all that's going on, all I see on social media is Queens and teams talking about, we're ranked number one, this and that. And it's like, it's January. Like, pump the brakes, man. Like, being number one in January doesn't mean anything. Honestly, being number one on March 4th doesn't mean anything. All that matters is on March 10th, whether you're number one or not. Like, on the Sunday, whatever that Sunday is. And if you get too fired up about being number one when it doesn't matter to be number one, all it does is put added pressure on you to play like you're number one, as opposed to we're in the 1st of February. So late January, 1st of February, the goal should be still now to get better. It shouldn't be to trumpet accomplishments that mean nothing at this moment, you know? And again, it's hard because you want to trumpet these things, but every time you trumpet them, you put more pressure on the people playing. You know, you put more eyes on them, you put more, and some people thrive in that pressure, but not many do. Like, there are a small minority who really thrive in those, and I wouldn't even say they thrive, they just don't respond negatively. I mean, my thing has always been Michael Jordan didn't rise to the occasion. He played the same way in the finals as he did in game 44 of the regular season. That's the difference. I mean, he was just his game never changed because everything was the same to him, and it's not like he was worse in the regular season than he was in the playoffs, and it's not like he took it to another level. Everybody else just choked. I mean, that's people folded in the pressure, you know. And again, when you put unnecessary pressure on people, a lot of people are going to choke. And unlike golf or tennis, it's not an individual sport. It's a team sport. So if two of your players don't choke, but six of them do, you're still going to lose. So how do you avoid it? You set different expectations. You know, I always laugh that we went into Brock one year, and one of the things that annoyed me but made me extremely happy in the same moment was Brock were number two in the country. They set up the game in the Meridian Center. They sold the place out like a month ahead of time. It was everything about one versus two. We went in there as number one. They were number two. Packed house, Meridian Center. The whole school is there. Everybody's going nuts, and we beat them in overtime. And I get interviewed after the game, and they go, "Coach, you beat You beat Brock in overtime. What went wrong? And I'm going, that's a weird question. I go, what do you mean? I go, well, I mean, what do you mean? What? We just beat them, and they're the number two in the team in the country in their gym that they've made the biggest game of their year. I don't know. I'm not sure anything went wrong. We just won. And I got in the bus, and I was kind of pissed. And then I'm going, you know what? That's not a bad thing, because if everybody feels that way, then really the championship is all that matters to us. Like, we're not getting too high, because it's just an expectation, and we just have to keep getting better to live up to that expectation. So as much as it annoyed me in the moment and it made me wonder why are we doing this? If winning against number two in their gym with 5,000 people going nuts, screaming at you, isn't good enough. On the other hand, it's going, you know what? Our guys kind of viewed it that way too. Like, we weren't good. It wasn't like they were overexcited and it was going to affect them being overconfident moving forward. In fact, it got us in the gym working even harder the next day. And, you know, when we had to deal with them again, I don't even know if they made it to a point where they had to play us again, but we won the national championship again. But again, when you're living that world, then if you can get motivation from winning, then it gives you a chance to win. If you don't get motivation from winning, it's something that's the greatest thing ever, then you're not going to get better.
How did you handle that? Like, you mentioned just like what matters is on March the 10th, if you're number one. And I think, you know, ever since you've won your first national championship, everyone has kind of just expected that you guys are going to be right there battling for a national championship. And basically every year you have, and you've won most years. So those first few years, though, how did you kind of guide the group in terms of, like, was it still championship or bust from day one when you arrived at Carleton? Or how was kind of the first few years of that growing process before you became a national champion?
The first 2 years, and I say this to coaches, new coaches all the time when they call me and ask me advice, the 10% who don't hate me, when they do call, I say, like, the first 2 years has to be culture or bust. Like, winning mentality, winning culture, not happy world. Like, you need to have a chip on your shoulder. Like, our first year, we weren't great, but there was a lot of, I don't want to use like too strong wording, but there was a lot of dislike in our locker room toward every other good team in the country who we felt didn't respect us, and we still weren't that good, but we were not going to be easy to play against, and we were going to be a nightmare every time we walked on the court, especially against the good teams to deal with. And, you know, the second year we were very good. We went to nationals, but we hadn't proved anything, but we didn't understand why no one thought we could win. Like, there was just a lot of bitterness towards a lack of respect. So our expectation from year one was all about culture. You know, doing the right things, bringing in the right people. Like, yes, talented players, but the right people. You can't bring in the wrong people. The thing is, like, one bad guy, because you're never going to have 15 great guys. What you're going to have is hopefully 6 really good leaders, competitive, tough guys, and whole 9 other followers who have no one else to follow but these competitive, tough, hardworking people. The problem is when you have one problem guy, he can influence 3. I mean, one, like, again, it's if it's only one, then kind of influences 3, but those 3 go, this is no good, because, like, there's 11 others who I'm not in the group with them. I need to do what those 11 others are doing. And then that one tends to change his attitude and start being more competitive, start working harder, and you have 15 guys who are kind of on page anyway. Like, maybe don't want to be, but certainly play the part. If you have more than one, if you get 2, and if you get 3, your team's done, because they're going to drag other guys, those middle people, with them, and then you're done. So you have to have like-minded people. You have to have competitive people. You have to have people who are willing to be selfless. You have to have people who are willing to work hard. And, you know, like, everybody sort of looks at me when I go, well, if you have two problem players, like, you got to get rid of them. Like it's no matter how talented they are in a team sport, you can't keep them around because they influence that middle group way too much. And it can kill what you have. So what we did was we just had incredible culture people like Terry Vallejo, John Addy. I mean, those two guys, like, I feel bad that they weren't part of a national championship, but they were the national championship. And they when I left the team room, when the players left the gym and I left the team room, the other guys were more conscious of how they acted and how they backed the team when I wasn't there than when I was there, because those guys were their peers and they didn't have to answer to anybody. They could control it the way, I mean, I think the players felt that they could control it the way they wanted to control it. And they knew that those guys were all about culture. So when you have leaders like that, it turns the program around. And then once we got good, we had on top of culture, we had talent, then it just became a situation where this is an expectation. And you know, it was so funny because I even argue with Taft sometimes about this. Like, there's a difference between exhibition and regular season and playoffs and regular season. I'm going, I don't see it. I don't know why there would be. I don't know why anyone cares. And I mean, Taft sees it more the way I see it than probably anyone in the world in terms of the U-Sport people. But I think every game is, I mean, we talk about this with Jordan and Kobe. People need to be more like that. Like, they have to, every game means the same. Like, this, oh, it's a nothing regular season game. It's a back-to-back. I get so tired of hearing the NBA, oh, the back-to-backs. It's like, what the hell? It's a back-to-back. What do you mean? It's two games in 24 hours, and, oh, we're traveling in between. Oh, yeah, that's a tough travel. I've traveled with pro teams. It's not exactly tough. The food's really good. The seats are really good. The sleeping's really good. The hotels you get driven directly to, they're pretty good. You know, like, it's a back-to-back. Compete. Like, and the guys who win, that's what they do. Like, how many games did Kobe miss other than when he couldn't barely walk? I mean, he competed. And again, that's kind of where we got to, where we were trying to win that October tournament game, you know, home exhibition supposed tournament, as much as we were trying to win the playoff game. Honestly, the game I least prepared for in any game in my entire career at Carleton was the OUA championship. To me, it was the biggest waste of time ever. Both teams had made nationals. You're seeding. You have to beat all the best teams anyway at nationals. Why would you show anybody anything? Why would you risk injury? It was the game we prepared the absolute least for all year. I mean, a Friday tournament game in October, we prepared for way more than the OAA final. And it cost us, I guess. We lost a few of those.
When it comes to the building that winning culture, and you have winners and good leaders and a good group, but you're building that, at some point, does the amount of losing impact that culture, or is it if you're confident in the people that are there and then the skill that is coming or is starting to be there, that you're not worried about that type of culture setting in because of those things, or can it impact it if those that group of people go through a lot of losing?
Well, I think a lot of cases you're losing because of the culture. Like, the bad culture causes the losing. Sometimes with some teams, you know, like, the losing comes with the lack of experience. You know, but in that case, generally the culture stays pretty positive, because if you're smart, you as an organization, you project to when the players are going to have more experience. Like, this is what we're trying to accomplish now, and this will lead us to accomplishing what we want to accomplish next year, and then this will lead us to where we want to be in 2 years. And that's why tempering expectations is always a positive, you know, to a certain level, like in terms of publicly, and then within the room, you're hoping you get there as quick as possible, but you hope for the best, you expect the worst, you're prepared for the worst. And again, a lot of the time when you have a veteran team and you're losing a lot, well, yeah, you got a clean house, but you're not losing because you're not good enough. You're losing because of the culture. Like, it's not like the losing didn't cause the bad culture. The culture caused the losing in that case. And with a young team, if you do it right, your culture can still be really good while you're progressing. And again, the goal is to progress. And if that means 10 points more a year in hockey or basketball, you know, pro NBA or NHL, then that's 10 points a year getting better, or 15 points in a year. That's a huge progress, like a huge in the NBA or the NHL. And you're progressing in the right direction. You're becoming more about winning. So your culture is good. You just need more experience. And if you improve 10 to 15 points every year, in 3 years, you're going to look back and go, well, you know what? We're 45 points, or it's 10, 15. We're 35 points better than we were 3 years ago. That's pretty good, you know, and obviously your culture was good. And now if you aren't progressing, then you got to figure that your talent level has to be a little better than it used to be because you're older, you're more experienced, yet your point totals or win totals in the NBA are lower. So there's only two reasons that could be: a lot of injuries or bad culture. And if it's not a lot of injuries, then you got to change the culture. So I think you look at it, and if there's progression, then I think you're doing the right things, and you will get there as long as you continue to progress.
Dave Smart is our guest, director of basketball operations at Carleton University and a consultant for the Ottawa Senators. Dave, Capital Hoops, excited to be broadcasting that on Friday right here on TSN 1200, women at 6 o'clock and the men following that. Couple of questions on this. First, from a basketball perspective, how much does it help, you know, your men's and your women's team just playing in that type of environment? Bigger crowd, arena setting, which is similar to what you would normally face in a national tournament. And does that help get your group prepared for a national championship at all? Or is it all just kind of, as you mentioned, just competing in practice? Or, you know, how much does this play into, you know, what you build each year just from a basketball perspective?
Does it help Osvaldo Gianni? No. Does it help Aaron Dornikamp? No. Does it help 60% of your team? Without question, 60% of your team aren't competitors like those. They're great people, but they're not competitive people like those guys I just mentioned. You know, so you know, some people, it doesn't change them at all. Like whether they were playing them at St. Luke's or whether they were playing them at TD Place is totally irrelevant to those types of people, the competitive people. But it makes a big difference to, well, between probably 50 and 80% of your team. So depending how uncompetitive you are. Now, if it's 80%, you're probably in trouble anyway. But if it's 50%, then that experience, especially, you know, learning from the failures of that experience, can really help you when you get to nationals. So I think there is an advantage gained by your first game in that kind of atmosphere, not being a winner go home at nationals against one of the eight best teams in the country. So for sure, I like certain types of people, it is a huge advantage. Certain types of people, it makes no difference whatsoever. Like that game did not change Osvaldo Gianni. It did not change Aaron Dornikamp. Like it didn't change Mike Smart, but that game helped some other guys. I'm not going to name names because they'll get mad at me, but they would admit it. If you had them on the show, they would say, yeah, like I wasn't ready for that experience, and then I lived it, and then it prepared me for nationals.
And just from a program standpoint and just City of Ottawa standpoint as well, I mean, you look, and this has been basically the case for 10 years. I mean, you look at the women's teams, 15-2 against 15-2. You look at the men's teams, it's 14-3 against 13-4. And typically that's the way it's been. It's played in front of a big crowd. It is one of my favorite events of the year every single year. What does this event mean just to basketball in Ottawa and also to your program in general?
Well, I mean, I think it's great for the community. I think it's shown in the grassroots. I think there's been a huge interest in the sport over the last 20 years since both teams have been pretty good. Again, having this type of event, like the fact that they did it out at CTC was great, and it helped in terms of the sport within the community. And now TD Place does a wonderful job, and they do a great job with Panda as well, and it draws interest in the university. But more importantly, I think in the sport, like, I mean, we don't have an NBA team. We have a summer pro team, but it's a little different than having a winter. Like, it's an off season pro league. It's not a in season pro league. So, you know, the interest that it draws to the sport within the typical season of basketball season, with whether it's in Europe or whether it's professionally, is great for our community. And I think it's great that TD does this, and I think it's great for the universities. I really think that it also shows, you know, the fact that we pack the place generally, the interest in the sport at the grassroots level, and it shows the amount of commitment so many people have put into the sport and put into the kids in the sport. So, you know, I like, when you play in the game, you just play. It's just another game. I mean, like, for me, it was just another game. I mean, it really didn't mean anything. As I said to you, I think it was last week, the Ottawa U rivalry it's never been a rivalry for me, because it's always been, for me, either no rivalry or Queens. Like, the Ottawa U thing, I think it's more a rivalry for Taft. It's probably not as big a rivalry for Danny, because she played at Mac and she played at UVic. Like, for Taft, he's been at Carleton for, I think, 74 years as a student and a coach now. I don't know, 74 or 75 years, something like that. So, you know, it's more of a Ottawa U Carleton thing for him than probably the rest of us. But it's still really good for the basketball community in our city. It's a good thing for us preparing for nationals, not necessarily. Like, do I think it's going to help Aiden? No. Do I think it's going to hurt Aiden? No. I mean, Aiden's getting to the point where he's like Oz, he's like Aaron, he's like Mike Smart. I mean, he's prepared for nationals. He doesn't need Friday's game to get him prepared for nationals. But will it help some of our guys? Yeah, it'll help some of our guys who it's going to be a new experience for them, and then they're going to hopefully have to go to Halifax and deal with a similar experience at the nationals when it's win or go home. So there's more, even more at stake. So I think it's good that way, for sure.
From a coaching perspective, when did it ever impact your preparation, whether it was managing the players that you felt did need the moment, or sight lines, or your ability to have the ref hear you bark at them? Did it change your coaching style at all?
No, I mean, again, like, it's one of those things where this game, like I said, it was just another game, and we prepared for it the way we prepared for any other game. The sight lines, they're not, like, to be very frank, they're like, we do have an advantage because of our facility. Like, I don't know if you've been in our facility, but, you know, it's not TD, but it's a pretty big facility. So the sight lines, when you're shooting on the main hoops, aren't that much different than they are at TD Place or when you go to Halifax. So that kind of thing, you know, you go in and shoot just to get a bit of a feel, but there's no Hoosers moment for our guys. You know, like, you're not taking the ladder out and the tape measure and showing them that it's 10 feet. It looks pretty similar in terms of the sight lines. You know, the talking to the refs, again,
that was kind of just a dig at you.
I know, but the funny thing about it is, when you get to nationals, when you play in front of 5,000 people in this, two things happen. Number one, the refs are they're way more nervous than they normally are. And even though because there's a huge spotlight on them too. So like, and I don't, like, I know people say, oh, refs cheat, refs do. I don't believe that, but I do believe refs in a lot of sports manage the game when they shouldn't be managing the game. I don't think that's cheating. I think it's managing the game. But when you get to that level, when there's that many people, especially if a lot of time it's Eastern Ontario refs, so all the people in the stands know who you are, you tend not to want to be that guy to manage the game. So there's less to be upset at. Plus, they generally, in that kind of setting, give you the better refs. So there's less to be upset at. It's kind of like Nationals. Everybody's going, well, you seem so calm at Nationals compared to the rest of the time. I go, well, what are they going to do in front of 10,000 people and people watching on national TV? They're going to manage the game that affects us negatively? That's just, I mean, and we've got the better, they've put the best refs in these games. There's less to get frustrated over, you know, like, and I don't think anybody's out there cheating. I just think some people, you know, it's just like players. You get refs out there in certain games and they're nervous. It's their first game or second game, and they start calling stuff that a lot of people don't call, and it affects the outcome of the game. It gets frustrating, but there's less to be frustrated over because, you know, like sometimes you get in the game and the guys start making calls and you go, you realize it's 2023, right? So they look at you like, what do you mean? Everything's on video. Like, this is on PlaySight. Rogers are filming it. We're filming it. There's like 16 different angles. So I hope you're confident that was the right call, because, like, tomorrow there's 15 angles to it. Like, it's hard to make mistakes as refs now and not be called out for it. Like, there is no way I would be a ref at this point. Like back in the, like, when I was,
I'd pay to see that, though.
I ref for 4 years, but man, like, I say refs don't generally cheat. I cheated. Like, I'm not gonna lie, I cheated. I told them I was cheating because I said, if you're gonna keep being a pain in the neck and not be funny while you're being a pain in the neck, and you're gonna accuse me of cheating, I will show you that I'm not cheating by cheating so you can see what cheating actually looks like. So we'll be clear that when you were questioning my integrity, you had no right to, because the difference between me cheating and not cheating is so great, you will see that there's a big difference.
You must have been a real joy as a referee.
Well, if you were just funny or logical, I think I was great. I like the people who, like, are, you know, sarcastically funny, because it keeps you sharp, but it keeps you entertained. And, you know, but all I'm saying is we got sort of off track. In those games, generally the refs are pretty good because they've put good people there. The refs aren't dumb. They know that all eyes are on them, so they're not going to do something ridiculous. I mean, you say, well, they do it in the NFL. Well, some of those guys, they take themselves pretty seriously. And honestly, just so we're very clear, I don't think Vegas is affecting the reffing at the Capital Hoops Classic. I'm no expert, but I'm guessing that no one from Vegas, no dirty money is affected. Like, there's no Donahue's out there who's affected by other outside sources at the Capital Hoops Classic. So I'm pretty sure the refs are good guys trying to do their best, and they really don't want the spotlight on them in that, especially in that kind of setting. So there's less to get upset at.
So last one for you. Now that you've mentioned the legendary Norman Dale, played by Gene Hackman in Hoosiers, favorite sports movie?
I don't know. I mean, like, I don't really have a favorite sports movie. I have things that I've put in clips for my team. Like, did you watch For the Love of the Game?
I don't think I've seen that one.
The baseball one?
No.
Clear the Mechanism?
No.
Neither one of you have watched that?
For the Love of the Game.
Yeah, so basically, I forget who it was, but he was a pitcher, and he was a veteran guy. And anyway, every time he went to throw a pitch, they'd have all the sound, like all the noise of Yankee Stadium going nuts, everybody screaming, and then he would say to himself, clear the mechanism, and it would all go silent. Mm-hmm. and he'd just lock in to the plate and the batter and hear nothing. He'd see nothing, hear nothing. So I would put, that's one of them that I would put in the clips in terms of, like, you need to clear the mechanism. No noise. Just get rid of all the noise. So you should watch that. I think,
okay.
I think AJ, you, I think it's called For the Love of the Game. Baseball.
Yeah, no, I've looked it up. Kevin Costner. I haven't
seen
it.
Kevin Costner, yeah. You need to watch. You'd like it. I mean, because you're like me, you're a bit of a geek that way. So you would like it.
Do you like Hoosiers at least?
I did like Hoosiers. Seabiscuit. Yeah. There were parts of Seabiscuit, like when
the
horse let the other, like, he's going to let the other horse catch up to him so he can look in his eye. And then he's gonna win because the competition kicks in as soon as he can see eye to eye. And obviously Rocky III, when he's not losing, he's just getting mad.
Rocky III is Clover Lang, right?
Yeah, when his brother-in-law was rubbed the guy on the head and said, No, he's not losing, he's just getting mad, or something like that.
Okay.
These are things that I've, like, in the middle of film, put into clips.
And what about Hoosiers?
The whole movie.
Anything from Hoosiers?
Not really. A great movie. I love the movie.
Yeah.
But there's nothing that sort of led to what we needed to do for a certain game.
Got it. Well, good luck this weekend. I'm guessing you'll be there Friday?
No, I'm in Toronto. My little guy has a basketball tournament in Toronto.
Well, you can...
I'll be watching.
You can turn on the iHeartRadio app.
I will be watching with no sound on that and listening to you. I hope it's not delayed. I hope one of them is not delayed.
Well, I guess you'll find out Friday. Thanks, Dave.
Who are you doing the game with?
Elias Elzane.
Okay. All right. You all set? You all prepared? You have notes?
I have not started preparing yet, but I have Friday off.
My buddy from the rival company always used to call me for many, many notes when he was doing certain U-Sport games. So I just, like,
well,
I know I'm not allowed to mention the company or
just,
the name of
just
the
just let me know what's a good time but, in the next 48 hours.
But he had a big, big board. I feel like he went overboard, a little geeky for me, but he was prepared. So if you need anything from me, feel free to call.
All right. Thank you. Next 48 hours, you'll be hearing from me.
I'm not going to lie. There might be some bias in it. So you might have to take it with a grain of salt.
I'll be ready for it.
All right.
Thanks, Coach.
Take care.
Dave Smart joining us in the Gabriel Pizza Hotline. It's the official pizza of the Ottawa Senators.
47.
Yeah, that's the usual. Looking forward to Friday. Always, you've worked some of those Capital Hoops classics as well. It's always a great atmosphere. TD Place Arena. Hopefully you can get down there. And if not, you can always catch it on TSN 1200. Take our break as we continue with a drive on TSN 1200.